Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Alex Fintech Center podcast. My name is Ifeoluwa Ekishenye and I'm your host for today. On today's episode, we have with us a very special guest, a thought leader in the data protection and privacy space, in the person of Femi Daniel. Let's welcome Femi Daniel.
Thank you very much, Ife.
Thank you, Femi, for joining us today. So Femi is the Senior Counsel, Privacy and Data Protection at MasterCard. Femi has a very expansive knowledge and experience in data protection and privacy space. And trust me, we have a lot to learn from Femi today. So let's get right into it. Femi, please, can you share with us how you managed the transition from a national data protection regulator to serving as the regional privacy counsel for MasterCard, encompassing over 80 countries?
Thank you, Ife. Well, I think it's good to start from the beginning. I was privileged to have had a kind of potpourri of experience. I started my career, in a law firm in Festac Town in a suburb of Lagos. Then I moved to Osun State in a kind of a twist. I became a kind of legal assistant to a commissioner who then became a senator and all that, and to the governor. So after about 2-3 years or so, I wrote my first book, Introduction to Computer Law in Nigeria. No, sorry, that was my second book. My first book was launched in 2012, Witnesses and Courts of Nigerian Judges. So I moved there. So after the 2015 book, I moved to System Specs, the makers of Remita. Remita is a popular software in Nigeria that, so many people listening to this podcast would possibly know Remita. So I moved in then as the in-house counsel. That was where I started gaining interest and, understanding of how the IT law world works. And I felt it was something that I would like to do more. So when the opportunity presented itself for me to join the National Information Technology Development Agency to support on the regulatory work, and the way the DG then, who later became the minister, Dr. Professor Issa Lipantami, the way he presented it to me, it felt to me like a call to duty, and I felt it was going to give me an opportunity to scale my impact as a citizen on the ecosystem in Nigeria. So I was with the regulatory department in NIDA, driving cloud, some of the emerging technology and some of the innovations that were done at NIDA at that time. I was privileged to be part of them in terms of IT clearance, regulatory engagements and all that. But the seminal work that I did at NIDA came in a very auspicious way. I was to represent the DG at an event that was holding in one of the hotels in Abuja. So when I finished making the presentation, it was on data protection. When I finished making the presentation, the lady that was sitting by me, she worked at British Council at that time. So she said, "Look, this thing that you people that you are doing, you need to take it seriously." And I was paying attention. So she told me that was November of 2018. She told me that they are janitorial service providers, contractors. They've relieved them because they were not complying with the GDPR. And that actually was the turning point for me, because I felt like, look, why would I have an opportunity to be in government and I have the opportunity to make a difference, and I would not be able to make that difference? So I didn't even wait till I got home. Right from the event, I spoke to the organizers of the event and I said, "Look, I don't have money. I don't know. I cannot assure you that you are going to get money out of this. But if we work together, I would create an opportunity for you to be able to transform this GDPR idea and ideology into the business. So that was how we got, I got them, you know, sign on. I introduced them to NIDA. We started drafting the Nigerian Data Protection Regulation between November 2018. By January, we already had it. And then, of course, there were the basic things, basic ingredients of the data protection laws in the NDPR. But I would say my main contribution was a pragmatic solution to the problem of capacity. I realized that, look, if I looked at models across Africa and across the world, number one, we couldn't compare ourselves with Europe that had been doing this for 40 to 50 years at that, you know, at that time, and they were still ramping up. And also looking at the way some of the other African countries were doing it, they would just say, okay, they have a law, then they would just, you know, tell you to register, you know, with the regulator, with poultry, some. And I felt, look, there is nothing supporting this registration. It's just a kind of paperwork, which is another government, you know, and I felt, look, this is not what I would like us to have. So the idea came to me that, and I wrote the clause that we should have what we call the data protection compliance organizations, have them licensed, and then we'll leverage on them to be able to help people to, you know, to gain data protection knowledge, put their systems in place. And to me, that became the game changer for data protection, not just in Africa, but across the world, because now that I have opportunity of engaging across the world, I've seen that many people are now seeing that idea as the most pragmatic approach for non-European countries to actually come up in their data protection work. Just stop me if you think I'm going too far or too fast, but I wanted to just give you the background.
No, it's fine. Like it's helpful.
Great. So the DPCO clause, because of the novelty of it at that time, I was made to present it at the management committee, at NIDA. They agreed. Then they said I should represent it at the management retreat in Kano. I went there incidentally. I mean, it was, because for me, it was a life work. All my energy, spirit and everything was into it. And I was glad that eventually on that day, the current national commissioner, Dr. Vincent Olatunji, was made to be a kind of chair of the committee. And I was to be like the desk officer. That was the day they designated me as the desk officer of Nigerian Data Protection Regulation. And they approved the DPCO concept. And we started. So beyond and above my daily job as a civil servant, I was also reaching out to law firms, reaching out to diaspora, people in diaspora, talking to anybody I could talk to that, look, this is what we're trying to do. You people should come and support. Let's see how this can actually create an industry. I'm so proud of the fact that within 4 years or so that was initiated, we're able to create an industry that was valued at over $12 to $15 million at that time, created about 7,000 jobs, and it's still growing. And of course, that has also led to the establishment of the commission. So that was my journey at the NITDA. Then, of course, transitioning to MasterCard. Well, the signs have been all over, right from COVID, because during the time of COVID, I really ratcheted up my understanding of the law of data protection. I became the vice chair of the African Union Data Protection Laws Harmonization Committee. I was always on calls, providing solutions to people for different countries, and you know, virtually. And then I was on a webinar, making presentation almost every other day. So when, of course, I've had invitations from other multinationals who can you join us, but I just felt, look, I wasn't up to it. But when eventually the time was right and I felt that, look, okay, I've made my mark, it was time for me to leave. So when MasterCard came calling in September or so of 2021, I felt it was the right time and the right place to move.
Oh, thank you very much for that, Femi. I mean, it's helpful to know the history and how we got to where we are in terms of regulation of the use of personal data in Nigeria. It's helpful to see how the whole conversation, you know, leading to the NGPR and now the Data Protection Act is helpful to see how the whole thing has, you know, grown over the years. Even that, I mean, years ago, we couldn't even speak to data protection, regulation of data protection in Nigeria. And I mean, our only recourse was to, you know, the GDPR, and then everybody just winging things. But it's helpful to see how we've come so far and your role and the role of your team in achieving that. So next is, we'd like to know what your typical day at work is. I mean, given the fact that you manage data protection and privacy across multiple jurisdictions, let's know what your typical day at work entails.
Yeah, it's about 2 years now that I've been in this, going to 2 years, about 3 months shy of 2 years. So, it's not been the same. When I first got in, it was a very, challenging. It was more challenging in the sense that, while you are waking up in Dubai, some had woken up about, Singapore had woken up about 4 hours before you, and Singapore is our, so there are 5 regions in MasterCard. So we have the one is seated in Dubai, Eastern Europe, Middle East and Africa. Singapore heads the Asia Pacific. Then we have the North America, Europe and Latin America. So I am one of the 5 regional councils, but that does not tell the whole story. We have over 80 privacy professionals, privacy lawyers, privacy engineers, communicators in the team. So it's a very robust team. So my role basically is to look at the laws, because we're a global company operating in over 200 countries. We look at the best practice across the company and say, okay, we have designed this product. We want to roll out in your region. So my work basically is to say, okay, Femi, from a privacy point of view, which countries could we be having any difference in terms of our general approach to this? What should we do? What is the risk? Is there a risk there? Is the business supposed to take some kind of a risk acceptance or whatsoever? I'm a privacy professional, but I'm a privacy professional that needs to have a very strong business acumen. I must be thinking, so I needed to put down my hat as a regulator, which is more or less defensive and black law letter kind of a lawyer, to look at it. In this circumstance, how do we ensure that we continue making money for the company while also complying? Because MasterCard is very, very, I mean, trust is at the center of our business. And that has been the approach and the sing song every day. So we don't want anything that puts us in a bad light, especially related to the use of people's data. So on a typical day, the way I'm now, after some time, I began to have a system around what I do. So I wake up, when I wake up, of course, do my regular, you know, basics and, you know, prayer and all that. So in 8 to 10, I block it out every day. I block it out, and it's at that time I go through my meals, because by the time I'm going to bed around in the night, America is just waking up, and everybody would have been sending their emails and all those kinds of things. So India and all that. So what I do is look at the mails, look at the ones that are top urgent, the ones that I can respond to on the fly. So I do that between that 8 to 10. The ones that I need to prioritize, that need more attention, I write them down on my to-do list for the day, and then just take on the, and then of course there'll be the usual meetings we have a calendar, and then I know that, okay, I have these other meetings and all like that. So basically the day, on a typical day, I speak to over 20 different nationalities, people of different culture, background, different intonation, different understanding. So you need to be culturally aware and mature and respectful, and of course show empathy and, you know, provide answers in a short, concise and direct manner. People do not have patience for long, circuitous kinds of responses, which is typical for us in the, you know, in government. Because if I'm writing a memo in government, of course, I'll write all the background history and all that. But
right.
So this one, you need to give us the answer, then you can explain it. That is how this is. So it's a real transition for me. But I think I've managed it very well. And I think the business and my colleagues are happy with my contribution.
Right. Thank you. So, I mean, like, going from your response, right, one thing that comes to mind is how, I mean, as privacy professionals working in-house, one major thing or one major dilemma in quotes that you would have to face is, you know, serving the needs of the business, right, which at the core of it is making profits and being able to service your customers vis-a-vis complying with regulations and ensuring that you don't have any issues with the regulators, especially from the data protection perspective. So I'm just wondering, right, that how has it been managing this particular aspect of your work? And I also want to know, have there been times where, I mean, talking about other jurisdictions, not necessarily Nigeria, the other jurisdictions you manage, there have been times where you've had to push for, say, for example, a development in terms of regulation. So you know how, because you work with different jurisdictions, you're able to know what other countries are doing, what's the trending, how do I put it now, the way to handle certain issues, how other jurisdictions are handling it. And say, for example, a particular jurisdiction is yet to pick up. Are there times where you had to drive the conversation with the regulators, I mean, the sponsor, not sponsor, right, but maybe like make moves or maybe advise them as to, you know, developing their regulations or laws of some sort? I just want to know how you manage that bit of your work.
Yeah, so if your question is fully loaded, so I'll try to respond to the issues one after the other. So on the way to balance my responsibility, my role as an officer for the, you know, for the compliance with the law, and also my role as an officer for the organization to make sure that we have. So I think I'm fortunate to be working with MasterCard. You know, there are many other organizations that the privacy culture is not entrenched. So what we do right from the ideation phase of the business, while before the coding starts, before the processing, you begin to develop the process, is that we have teams from that are also comprising of the privacy professionals who ideate the product together right from the beginning. So, for example, you want to launch something on, let's say, you know, payment gateway for farmers. Someone in the room needs to be a privacy professional who is thinking, okay, what could be the concerns, the privacy implications? Are they going to be biometrics? Are they going to be, how are they going to have access to it and all those kinds of things? So we have this process of privacy by design. So we embed privacy into all the process. And when the product is ready, we have what we call the One Trust tool. One Trust, of course, it's a brand that many privacy professionals may know. So what we do is we impute you, the business person will go on the platform, you know, explain all the basic ingredients about that. And then the privacy professional will take it up and provide, you know, the legal basis for cultural transfer. Do we need do we need this? Whatever thing we need. And if there is still a risk that is residual on the, for the rollout of the product, that risk will be noted, and whoever needs to sign off on it from the business side will sign off. So if that gives you, as a privacy professional, a very strong foundation to be able to know that you have, in terms of compliance, you have done the work ahead of time. So I don't usually engage in a firefighting mode. We already know, okay, this is the product. Okay, give me the one trust assessment number. I'll go check what has been there. And then that gives me, assurance. And if there are other risks that is remaining, I can now say, okay, no, for this country, we need to do this to be able to mitigate the risk and all that. So that's how we balance for both. And of course, one of the things about MasterCard is you have to be factual, you have to be truthful. I mean, there are situations I've been in on calls where, I mean, people, if someone is trying to even say something that is minutely off the true picture, it's someone in the call that will call you out and say, no, this is the fact, and we need to understand the fact. So even if we have to engage the regulator, we know what the facts are, and we know how to engage the regulator with the facts. And, so that has been a very helpful kind of foundation and approach that we have adopted in that regard. So that's for the balancing. On the engagement, yeah, incidentally, because of my role, I'm also responsible for our regulatory engagement for privacy side. So we have a regulatory team that does a lot of work in terms of engaging with almost their remit was all regulators, but you understand that many privacy regulators in my region, they are just coming up. So we have, and I have a very solid relationship with my regulatory team. So what we've done is to say, okay, you face the privacy regulators. Let's make sure that we continue managing them and continue supporting and continue having their ears and all that. So I am responsible for that. And I can give you a very practical example. In 2021, before I joined, Saudi Arabia, which is one of the biggest markets for us in the region, actually issued a data protection law which required also processing of data, and that was not a good outcome for us. So, of course, when I got involved, of course, some work had been done. So when I got involved, eventually we started engaging, we made a kind of points. We started engaging the regulator, and we're very fortunate because all hands were on deck. We're engaging the regulator, that's the National Data Management Office, with the Saudi Data and AI Authority. We're engaging with them, giving them the reasons. We're not telling them because MasterCard needs this. We're telling them the implications for their business. So we went looking at all their policies, looking at their strategy, looking at the investment they were making, looking at where Saudi wanted to get to. And we told them, look, if you go along with this localization issue, is going to affect the investments you've made and the aspirations that you have. And of course, the message, was well received. So Saudi is the only country in the world that I know that had issued a law in 2021, issued the executive regulation for that law. It rolled back the executive regulation, rolled back the privacy and data protection law of 2021, and reissued another one. In fact, incidentally, today, 14th of September, is the day where the new law actually comes into effect. And I can tell you that this new law now, with plus its implementing regulation, which you regard as a kind of subsidiary regulation, now allows cross-border data processing based on binding corporate and common rules, standard contractual clauses, adequacy list, in industry kind of arrangement. So it's a great win for business, for the country, and of course MasterCard is in the areas they want us to domesticate our operations. We are doing that. We stick to the issues of respecting the regulator, because that's the only way that they can respect us, because when they know that you respect them, then you become, you know, believable and they respect us for what we do.
Okay. Well, that's really impressive. Thank you for sharing that with us. So, quickly, I'd like to also know your general thoughts on the NDPA, that's the Nigeria Data Protection Act. And, you know, given the fact that you work with, or your work covers other jurisdictions, I want to know your general thoughts on the NDPA and also, you know, in comparison to the Data Protection Acts of some of the other jurisdictions that your work covers.
Yes. So I would say that as a Nigerian, I'm proud of what eventually came out. If in 2019, on the last legislative day of the National Assembly, I think that should be the 8th or 9th Assembly, there was a data protection bill that was passed by the National Assembly. It was transmitted to the president. The president had 30 days within which to sign. Just the same thing that we have now. But that bill came to me. Of course, it came to NIDA, my DG directed it that I should do the review. And even though I was responsible for data protection, I actually wrote the opinion that made the president not sign that bill. If you look at that bill, section 36 of it requires localization of all data in Nigeria, in Nigeria. And section 42 or so now makes it that you have about a fine of 8 billion naira if my mom, who used to sell if you put a data that is supposed to be in Nigeria, if you put it in Benin Republic, you'll be liable to pay 8 billion naira. I felt that was not the idea of what data protection should be. Data protection is not supposed to be a business killer. It's not a binary issue, actually, because the way some of the drafters at that time looked at it was that it's all about national security. But there are data protection and data privacy goes beyond just national security. It's also economic security. It's also job security. It's also agricultural security. It's also technology. So there is a lot of issues in privacy and data protection which goes beyond just looking at it in a kind of binary. So I'm happy that having come from that extreme edge in 2019, in 2023, after, you know, the engagement and a lot of people have made a lot of sacrifice to get us to where we got to, the data protection law that was issued in Nigeria is one of the most pragmatic. It's a law that gives you legitimate interest. I wrote the NDPR and I know that one of the failings of the NDPR was that we didn't have a legitimate interest for the data controller. But at that time, the argument, and of course, I'm happy to take the flak for it. The argument is that if we left the legitimate interest at that time in the NDPR, people were just going to forget about every other thing. And they say, well, have a legitimate interest. That because we felt we were not matured enough to manage that. But I mean, that had gone. Now we have a law that allows legitimate interest, that puts a lot of controls on what the data controller and processor should do, that tells you, gives, it's one of the longest list of opportunities for you to do data transfer. And despite that, the governance around it is much more robust. I have seen a lot of laws. I mean, that's what I do every day. I'm looking at the various laws. There are laws that are so thin that you don't have, there's no meat in it. You don't have the gravitas that you need to be able to drive, you know, your industry. And there are some that are overloaded. That's one of the problems that the GDPR is having. That's why there's a need for a lot of updates and judgments are coming out that is more or less throwing a lot of things into new perspectives and all that. So what we've done, I think it's a great start. Where we need to go from here is just what the commission is doing. They've inaugurated a kind of general application directive committee to kind of profile more, to give some other, bolts and nuts around the law. But this should not be limited to a few people. Of course, there should be more consultation, which I am very confident that the commission is going to be doing, because Dr. Vincent, as a pioneer commissioner, he had always been a stickler for consultative, governance, which I think is good for the industry and good for Nigeria.
So just to look at some of the provisions of the NDPA, I'd like to talk about the NDPA's provisions on international data transfers. If you look at the Act, what we have is pretty much the adequacy rule and derogations, right? So I'd like to know what you think about that. And then also, given the wordings of the Act, in terms of adequacy, it would appear that we are sort of stuck with the NITDA whitelist for now, and pending the time that the Commission is able to do some work in that space. So what do you think about this approach to international data transfer in comparison to the applicable rules in other jurisdictions?
Actually, drawing up adequacy lists is a very complex issue. I would be remiss not to tell you that, look, when we did that for the NDP, I was fortunate to have more or less driven that work. When we drew the list, the idea behind it at that time is, let's just look for the lowest common factor, to just say, okay, does this country have a law? Do we have a business relationship with this country? Is there a kind of rule of law that can make people? So we just drew up that list. It's a very, it's one of the longest list of adequacy lists that you could ever find.
It's good to hear this from you, because to be fair, in different quarters, that list has actually been faulted, right? In terms of, looking at some of the countries on the list, and you never wondered how big this is. But knowing now that, it was just like a starting point, and then just trying to find like the US common factor, like you said, it sort of helps to understand the regulator's mindset behind, having some of these countries on the list.
Yeah, of course. If there is anybody to take the cane for that, I would say I am the one, not the DG, not Dr. People, many of the leaders didn't even, they were just like, okay, just, they gave me the free rein and of course consulting with people. But the idea at that time, and it's still something that I would say, reflecting back, maybe, of course, there is a lot of things to learn, but I think it was the best thing that we could have done at that time. Because look, if we were entering at the time before this regulation started coming in, the digital economy was contributing about 8% to the GDP. By the time we brought out the data protection regulation, some of the cloud policies and all that, local content and all that, we had moved the GDP contribution of digital economy from that 8% to about 18%, and it was still growing. And that is still, that's the highest growing sector. What did we need to do? We couldn't be sticking our heads in the sand. I want my young people like myself who were into fintech, designing products and all that, to be able to transfer data. Other countries may put barriers, but we could not afford trade barriers. So we didn't want data, at that time to be the barrier for us to be able to access other markets. So that was the thinking at that time. But now that we've matured, there is more understanding of the issues. There is more understanding now. Yeah, I would not say that we should go ahead, just drop a list too quickly. Like I have said, in the Middle East, we've proposed a number of different adequacy lists to the countries here, we propose that, oh, you have GCC, Gulf Cooperation Council. Why don't you have this list of countries that you can easily send data? It's still a long way from the goal. I said you are in the G20. Why don't you say that the G20 countries would be automatically be in the because look, data is economics. So a data regulator that doesn't understand the economics of data or the implication of data to the overall scheme will be looking at it only, no, I don't want people to use data. Actually, our objective as data regulator in the real sense is for people to use data in the right way, in a way that protects the individual. So that should be it. But it is for data use, not data restriction. That's not the idea. So, I mean, I'm saying that the adequacy list would come, but I would encourage businesses. There are a number of other tools that you have in the law that you can use. Of course, you have the standard contractual clauses. It's something that the commission can work on quickly and get. I mean, within, these things don't happen overnight. It can happen within 1 year. Binding corporate rules are there. You can prepare your binding corporate rules, submit it to the commission, let them, I believe that there is efficiency for them to be able to quickly review and get you response. The industry can come together. For example, the financial industry can come together. The healthcare industry can come together. And they have a kind of code of conduct for data transfer that can also be approved. So we it's no longer a one-way street where the regulator will just tell you, this is what I want you to do. You need to take active participation in the ecosystem and for us to move forward. And of course, it's not limited to Nigeria. Even for us, we've been very proactive in the markets we operate, and we've been supporting our regulators to get some of these things clarified.
Thank you, Femi. And I agree with you in terms of use of SECs and BCRs, because I think that that's a way to ensure that you sort of have your things structured as a business. I mean, prior to the NDPA, what we've seen some companies do, in addition to you know having BCRs for intra data transfer or data transfer outside the organization, we've seen some in Nigeria, you know, sort of adopt the GDPR's SEC, because we don't have any, we don't have standard contractual clauses, you know, approved by the regulator here. But now that we have a commission, right, we are hopeful that some work could be done in that aspect, and we're able to kick up and have something, you know, that is substantial and something that we can ride on as a country. Moving on from that, I'd like to know what you think about the idea of having a continental data protection regime, more like what we have with the European Union. I mean, some have even said that they think this should be synced with the efforts at the AFCFTA. What do you think? Do you think that a unified approach to data protection would strengthen the rights of data subjects in Africa, and also, you know, promote the free flow of data under structured supervision?
No, I don't think it would. I actually think it would enhance data protection in Africa, because we are as strong as our weakest link. And that's why the work that we did at the African Union Data Laws Harmonization Committee, Technical Working Group, was to look at the commonalities, the differences, and we brought all these issues out, and we saw that there are more commonalities in the laws more than the differences. And for the differences, we looked at is what should be the baseline. That was where the African Union data framework that was issued in 2022 came out, you know, more or less, you know, considering all these issues that we looked at. Now, for me personally, we cannot compare ourselves with Europe. The history and the strategy of Europe and the things that made Europe to adopt the GDPR, the circumstances do not occur, are not the same in Africa. So, look, Europe had to be forced to unite because of the World War One and World War Two. And immediately after the World Wars, then, of course, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights came. Then the 1950 European Data, the European Human Rights, Convention came on board, where the issue of privacy, and of course, you know that privacy was a major issue in the Second World War. The identification of, oh, these are Jews, these are not Jews, wear your badge, it was a privacy issue that led to some of these other things, you know, and of course, the Hitler regime, it was a breach of privacy. So if you don't understand the history of some of these things, one will say, oh, they are doing it, why don't you do it like that? Why don't you do it like that? There is a lot of nuance behind those things. So the way I had advocated, and I'm still advocating in Africa, is we should have a confederate approach to this. We should have our common principles. Then, so if I am, if for example, I am MasterCard, I'm operating in almost all the African countries, then there should be a single entity that can, you know, that I should be accountable to. Rather than for me to go to Ghana, I'm registering, I go to Nigeria, I'm being audited, I go to South Africa, I'm expected to do this. It doesn't help, you know, our economic strategy and growth. So I agree that the AFICTA, the Africa Intercontinental Trade Agreement, is going to help drive that conversation, because the European common market approach was one of the reasons why they had to force themselves to do data privacy also, and to, you know, ramp it up. So I believe that the AFICTA, if it is given the necessary cooperation, we would be able to, you know, move quicker in complying, in developing a common data protection framework. But even if we can't get the whole of Africa to start at the same time, we could have, you know, some countries, you know, the Kenya, Ghana, Uganda, Nigeria, coming together to say, okay, if you have a lot of Nigerian banks in Uganda, I've been to Uganda, I've been to Kenya, Ghana, you see a lot of UBA, GT Bank, Access, all these people are doing data transfer by the second. Why don't you have a kind of common framework to regulate these guys? And of course, number one, that empowers the regulators more, because what they will be paying will not be the same thing as any motor park operator will be paying. But beyond that, it gives you a stronger weight when you need to engage them in terms of regulatory compliance and all that. So that we are speaking to the regulators, they've gotten the notes, they understand what we are trying to say. But getting people together takes time, so we'll continue advocating and seeing how we go from there.
All right, thank you, Femi. Thank you. It's been a very insightful conversation, really, and I'm sure that our audience, you know, would also learn a lot from this. I've learned a lot from this. To wrap this conversation up, we would like to know. Can you, give advice to a young person who would like to chart a career in data protection? What would you say to such a person?
Yeah, there is no extraordinary opinion or idea that I will share, but I will just tell anyone who is interested in this field that, look, number one, there is a lot of opportunities in this field, because there will be a lot more need for data protection officers. So for any young lawyer especially, this is a field that you should be looking into. But I can also share the way, because when I started this, it's just a few short years ago, but now it looks so long, because when you're starting something from the scratch, it's somehow a heavy lifting. Every day at that time, virtually every day, I was listening to a webinar on data protection, data privacy, the ones I understood, the ones I didn't understand. I was just listening to it, I was reading all I could, just listening to all I could. That is how to become an expert in your field. If you do that if you are listening to one same thing and reading it and getting involved and get speaking about it for 1 year, before that 1 year, I'm sure you'd have become. So my advice is be engaged, be interested in it. You may not get, you know, the big break in 1 day, but whatever opportunity you have to contribute to this area, just continue doing it. The big breaks will come, the opportunities will come, and I can only tell you that it's a growing field and it will continue to grow bigger and better.
All right, thank you so much for that, Femi. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thank you for your time, and thank you again. So to our audience, thank you for joining us on today's episode. See you next time. Bye.